said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear with my lovely co-host Brian. How are you?
I'm good.
I feel like I think these come back to back. We're talking to Killing of the Sacred Deer today, but literally hitting play. First watch for both of us. We'll get into that in a bit, but thinking, shit, we have recently just covered back to back Nicole Kidman's.
Oh, yeah.
And, pleasantly happy about it. All right.
Yeah, no complaints. I mean, we'll get into it, I'm sure, because she's going to come up. But, like, yeah, no complaints.
No complaints.
If you watched our Others episode where we talked about Nicole Kidman's The Others, Yousef was there, and he's the one who suggested this movie. And, you know, it's hard because me and Yousef align on a lot of things, but sometimes he might suggest something that's some pretentious bullshit. And this one rides the line. No spoilers. I'm not going to tell you where I land on it. We'll wait
okay,
to the end.
This is where we'll do our beginning a little shorter then and get to it, because I think me and you are going to be aligned in the thinking of the movie.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I don't know, because we also didn't talk about it before.
No, I never. No, I would never waste that content.
That's not even being cheeky. We really have no fucking idea. All right. Since we've last discussed, I mean, it's the end of January now. Oddly enough, the Oscars were announced today, but that has nothing to do with this podcast. There's literally this
Infinity Pool didn't get any noms, so I'm out.
No sucky babies for James.
No.
Although Alexander Skarsgård in that movie just plays such a great broken, confused man. Anyway,
I'd be a nom,
but. Yeah, it's the same complaints every year, just in a new package.
Well, my thing with the Oscars is I realized a long time ago was, like, I don't really care. I like when the movies I like win awards. That's fun.
Yeah.
But then when they don't, or it's, like, a movie I don't care about, like, I don't watch Oscar movies just because they get nominated. It has to be something I'm interested in anyway, and then if it got nominated and draws my attention to it, that's fine. But, like, I've skipped over plenty of Oscar movies that I didn't watch just because they were perfunctory. I was like, I don't need
like,
to.
I know for you, it's like, you know, I think like, using air quotes for anyone listening, like, you know, you grew up as like a Browns fan, essentially, or in your house with your mother. Is if they were ever in the Super Bowl, you'd be like, I guess I was interested adjacently
I went to a lot of playoff parties because my team was in the game.
Yeah.
But you don't care. And like I said, like, there's so many, there's like, countless examples of how movies that win Oscars don't stand the test of time, and movies that are just good and don't win any awards go on to be classics. It's meaningless. It's a very like pat self back patty oh, hand stroke thing for them.
I have,
you know,
fun with it. Like almost every year, some years I'm not into it. But having said that, it's the same complaints and things packaged year in and year out, and like. It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be right.
They can't nominate everybody, so there's always going to be somebody complaining.
I like it for myself. That's about it. Anyway.
Like I said, I like when movies I like win awards. That's fun. I enjoy that part of it.
I do wish there was horror this year that was, that was represented. I think you could go with, you mentioned Infinity Pool, like that's out there enough. I think you could also go with screenplay wise or like technical wise. Probably you could always go with like Talk to Me was really stand out. That's where I'm confused in like shit though. Especially when it comes to Oscars is the foreign language category. It's like, okay, why couldn't it have When Evil Lurks and Well, I know why, but why couldn't When Evil Works and like Godzilla Minus One be in that best foreign language film?
Kind of? Yeah.
It makes, you know, like two genre movies. Like,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, obviously Godzilla got nommed for special
that
effects.
Was very
cool. We knew it would, which is great. But like, yeah, it'd be cool to see it get noted because it's actually a very good film. Oh,
it's
too.
A beautiful,
it's
beautiful
got
movie.
A, like, it's actually got a great story and like great characters and emotional weight and everything.
I,
an amazing monster.
I saw a cousin of mine this weekend, and we talked about that stuff, like Oscars, the blah blah blah. She's like, "You have any recommendations?" I was like, "Godzilla Mine," and she was like, "No, it's not my scene." I go, "Listen, it's a movie, one of those movies that could literally be about like, you could replace Godzilla with like a fucking box of Oreos and the."
Yeah.
I'm looking at.
Well,
box
he would have
Oreos,
to. I mean, or something destructive, but like Godzilla could be like an air assault from another country. It doesn't
yeah,
have to, it just happens to be a monster.
It's
like,
that inconsequential. Because by the time you get into the end of that movie, you're already so invested into it. Like, they could be putting anything out there and be like, yeah, let's go. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about. Have you seen anything recently?
Oh, well, you know, of course. I'm always watching horror. Even when I'm taking a break from horror, I'm watching horror. Most recently, I got two that I wanted to talk about. From 1997, this one's a throwback. It's Snow White, A Tale of Terror. Starring Sigourney Weaver and Sam Neill. And also Monica Keena from Freddy vs. Jason.
Who's that in Freddy vs. Jason?
She's the main girl in Freddy vs. Jason. The,
oh, really?
We ruined both our pasts, that girl.
She's probably pretty young in that.
I mean, 97, it's about 10 years before Freddy vs. Jason, so she's probably like...
No, that's like 4 years. That's like 4 years before Freddy vs. Jason.
I thought Freddy vs. Jason was 2007.
No, it's like 2003.
Oh, isn't that early? Okay,
so maybe
yeah.
Like 5 years, 5, 6 years.
Yeah,
anyway,
so she's probably
semantics.
Like 20 in this and 26 okay. In that or something. You know what I mean? But either way, it's a fun one. Sigourney Weaver gets to play a bad guy, and she gets to like get all made up like an evil witch, so you know she probably had fun with that. It's
should
a fun performance
it?
From her. Yeah, you should watch
where,
it.
Where is it?
Oh, well, it was on my DVD shelf.
That's cool, because I think I tweeted at you that that was one of those covers, walking through the aisles
yeah.
As a child going, ooh, not you. What's this Snow White? I'm
yeah.
Seven.
Yeah.
Creep
yeah,
me
it,
out.
It was definitely, and I like to think of it too, because it's like right in the same era where she was making Alien Resurrection. So like Sigourney Weaver was really feeling herself at this time. She's just like, she's got her Oscar, she's done her prestige movies, she's just like flexing some muscles and having some fun.
A couple years, I'm going to do Holes.
I'm about to be in Galaxy Quest. I'm
ooh,
killing
great.
It. Oh, no, I was going to say one other one from a director that we all know and love, Mr. Rennie Harlan. 2013, Devil's Pass. Have you ever
heard
of this?
It. How is it? No.
It's fun. It's about, have you ever heard of the Detlev Pass mystery, you know, and for just a quick liner notes, this is not completely accurate, but there's a mountain area where there's this pass in Russia, and there was this super mysterious death of all these campers, and in really weird ways, they stripped off their clothes, they tore out of their tents, some were missing parts, and like it's been a mystery that people have speculated about for a lot of years, and this is a thing where they like do basically a Blair Witch knockoff about
found
that
footage.
It's like a bunch of kids go to like do a documentary about Detlev Pass, the
sure.
Real event, and something happens to them, and then it's found footage with them.
That'd be interesting because Rennie Harlan is such a, at least back in the 90s, let's say, it's about the last time I thought of Rennie Harlan. I mean,
yeah,
he makes such a which weird choices as the director is why his movies like. You know,
I mean, hey, I think
his nightmare.
He's an action legend. He made some killer movies in the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I was thinking of like Deep Blue Sea and like
Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger.
His Freddy movie, Cliffhanger.
Longest Goodnight.
They're all fun as hell. So I'm willing to give almost anything he's done a chance because there's, like I said, there's a weird sensibility about like. Some of his fucking choices, and
oh,
I think
sure.
That's why he kept getting work. I mentioned before I had a weird 6 day yesterday, and I watched a very poor horror comedy starring I think his name's Taylor or something, the heavier guy from Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. I think his name's Taylor. It's Taylor something. Or Tyler. And Malin Ackerman.
I bet it's Tyler.
And it was called Cottage Country, and it was fucking rough. And they just tried every like horror comedy trope on small budget they possibly could. And like the worst representations.
There's some amazing horror comedies out there, but I do think that horror comedy is one of the most try hard genres, and like very hit and miss.
Tyler Bean, but I could look at the cover. I mean, that is Tucker and Dale type cover. I mean, I knew it was going to be bad. Don't get me wrong. It was fucking terrible. Anyway, that's the closest thing to horror. I guess Godzilla Minus One for genre since a couple weeks ago. And yes, they're keeping it pretty light. I'm playing that video game, Alan Wake 2.
Oh yeah, that's like a horror thriller game.
Oh yeah, full blown. It's fucking creepy. Like it got me a couple times where I was like, I don't want to play. I'm not playing in the evening because, like, you know, the lights are off and I'm playing and to get more invested. Nope. Yeah, it's a whole horror writer back and forth. Recommend it if anyone has a, you know, like an Xbox, PS5, whatever. But Killing a Sacred Deer.
Are we ready?
I think we're ready, right?
Ready as I'll ever be.
I feel like nothing's really getting me hard in the movie space right now with the horror place. The most interesting thing is I want to check out the Snow White. I feel like that is on Tubi.
I bet it's gotta be.
Full disclosure, where I watch Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh. I actually re-signed up for Netflix and watched it on Netflix.
Ah, okay, cool. I still have yet to break and sign up for Netflix.
Yeah, I didn't want to, and I guess I should have looked a little. I just like thought Netflix was like the place I was gonna have to watch it, so I just I did their cheap. You know what I realized about myself? I used to be a real stickler. It's part of probably why I started buying movies. I hated watching things on TV. I hated watching them with ads and commercials.
That's why I started as a kid.
Right, yeah. But like I think what I really hate is that they edited stuff out and you lost stuff. I've realized that if the movie is complete, I can stand a few commercial breaks. Now I got to give a shout out to definitely Peacock, and maybe Paramount Plus does this too, where they do a block of ads at the beginning. They'll be like, here's 3 minutes of ads.
So,
but then the movie is on, you know, no break.
So I had I like that you mentioned this, because I had a heavy, heavy Peacock, like watching content week. Shout out to Craig Robinson's show, Killing It. Me and you were messing about it. It was so good.
Great show.
But I had so there were commercials spliced in on some of the stuff I was watching on the app. But what they did, which other things don't do that have them, is they definitely plan where to insert the commercial break. So it's not just like a Tubi.
That's a big thing. Tubi doesn't do that. Tubi will cut right in the middle of a scene.
Well, it's the algorithm of we're talking, bam, tie ad.
Yeah.
You know, God, we were, one of the things it was might have been that Nanny Diary. I don't know. It was one of those weird movies watching yesterday, but the way it was cutting and certain things looking, is this part of the, nope, okay, that's an ad.
Because all those streaming movies look like shit, so they all look like a commercial anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but I like that you mentioned, because literally just thinking about the ads and the space, because, you know. So, nah, this was on Tubi for me, and I think it's uploaded. I mean, you probably could have found this on, could you have found this on Canopy? I know they had a pretty big A24.
Yeah, probably. I really should have looked a little harder, huh?
I should have looked a little harder too, to be fair.
Netflix, I signed up for the $6.99 with ads version, so whatever.
How were their ads?
So far, not too terrible.
Hmm.
They were mostly like, in as far as for the movie, scene breaks, you know, they did them pretty well. That's good.
So, but yeah, this movie.
And not very long, like 30-second ad, not like 2 or 3 minutes of ads.
Not like Paramount or something.
Yeah, where like you'll have like four, like a bunch.
It's like, here's 2 minutes of ads, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But
get me back to Colin Farrell's beautiful beard. I can't.
Literally, there's a. I know we said we weren't going to jump. The end shot, like the not shot, but like the end to end scene where he has the beanie on and the beard.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this, you were like, and it's kind of laying it back in his head. I'm like, that's back to you in your tabloid days when you were just like.
It looks like when he was on Scrubs.
Yeah, you're just like running around with the scruff and the beanie, and like women are like, that's a heartthrob. Like that was that end of the, anyway. No, this movie's, Yorgos Lanthimos. I wanted to make sure I said that right. Who's like become this pretty prolific director. I saw
he's big right now on, well, you know what we're talking about. His movie Poor Things got like 11 nominations.
That movie is phenomenal. That movie.
I haven't got a chance to see it. I definitely want to see it. I did not make it a priority to see it in the theater though. That's my bad.
I saw it. It's very like this. It's actually it's goth Barbie in us. It's erotic.
Yeah, I think
goth
we talked
Barbie.
About it on the last episode.
We talked about it. And it's fun. I mean, like, it's good. It's a very different tale than something
I like
Emma
Stone. It looked fun. I'm definitely going to check it out when I, you know, when
I but that was the first of his I've seen because I've never seen Dogtooth. I thought I had seen The Lobster, but I realized I think I rented it and, like, fell asleep and then never revisited. Like, I can't
say. Yeah, I'm the same way. I haven't seen any of his movies, and this is a first-time watch for me, so we're both coming in blind.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan of this movie and you're tuning in, don't get offended if we're too stupid and we missed the deeper themes.
Oh, this movie, watching it about halfway through, I thought, oh yeah, this is something where we should have some sort of smart guest on to go for.
Lon, we should have had Lon on.
Definitely.
He could have done all the talking.
Yeah, he could have been like, wow, no, that's to represent his id.
Like, yes. I also,
yes, this is it. Yes. Yeah, yes. Now, so just a quick plot synopsis. We normally do, and this one I can tell by the sentences now without reading them that this tells us everything we need to know.
Oh yeah,
Doctor
well,
Stephen.
Spoil. Don't,
well, I'm gonna read it.
A spoiler? It's not
no,
a spoiler.
It's,
one,
it's
is
the
it?
Google synopsis that we've read on every episode.
That doesn't mean it won't be a spoiler.
You're right. We'll see what's going on. Doctor Stephen Murphy is a renowned cardiovascular surgeon who presides over a spotless household with his wife and two children. Lurking at the margins of his idyllic suburban existence is Martin, a fatherless teen who insinuates himself. Inserts himself into the doctor's life.
That's a weird use of insinuates, Google.
Okay, inserts himself in the doctor's life in gradually unsettling ways. Soon the full scope of Martin's intent become menacingly clear when he confronts Stephen with the long-forgotten transgression that will shatter his domestic bliss forever. So that actually makes this shit sound even more dramatic. Because it doesn't play out. The movie doesn't... So the movie... Literally, the first note I have is "da fuck" because the movie starts out with a real heart surgery, and it's just a footage of that.
Yeah, it's. I was like, "Oh, this is rough." And then I also thought about how like I was gonna have to look at Barry Keoghan's face for 2 hours, and I was like, "That's rough."
the weird boy is here. Is my second
the weird
note.
Boy is gum. Oof. You know, I have to say, I'm glad though that we're letting people who look like Barry Keoghan get famous. That's actually good.
But I have a. It's good. It's good. So he's the big thing is the Saltburn now, and he's his big old.
Yeah, he's in Saltburn right now.
He's his big old penis, but he's getting like. Doing like jacked covers and like red carpets. I think he has some like thought Insta model girlfriend, like, you know, doing him, no shade there. And I think he was quoted being like, I know I played the little freak weird guy, but like, it's time to blossom out or something. And I'm like, not the typecast, but like, you need to stay in that lane. You need to stay in your Paul Dan. You need to stay in the Paul Dano lane.
That's right. That's right, Barry. Know your place, man.
You're not You think
you're not going to be James Bond? Don't think you're going to be James Bond.
I'm going to use some bad analogies here because I know he has his fans. I've seen them on Twitter. All four of you guys. Barry Keoghan. That's what I'm talking about. I do not want to see him go the way of an as an actor of like how the guy who's in The Bear is like. Jeremy Allen White. He's like, ooh, what a hard job, and he is because of the characters he plays, not. Yeah. Because of his, you know, it's matured into that. That's where we're going with Keoghan, and to each his own. But in this movie, I mean, I see this is like peak little freak.
Yeah.
And
this, you know, honestly, this movie made me think they should have hired Barry Keoghan to play Corey Cunningham in Halloween Ends.
Now that's.
Yeah. It'd have been good. They even have the scene in this where she's like riding on the motorcycle and all hugged up on him, the daughter. And that's immediately what I thought about. I was like, ooh, Halloween Ends.
That might be that's the best shot in all of her Halloween. I'm kidding. That's a good casting. I feel like
Halloween Ends couldn't get a classy guy like Barry Keoghan to be in their movie, though. He'd have looked at the script and be like, nope.
Is Barry Keoghan a classy guy? I mean, he's known this year for, like, fucking a grave and, like, looking
at I mean, I guess what I meant classy, I meant artsy. You know what I mean? He would need his movie to... Now, granted, Halloween Ends is the most artsy Halloween movie, so maybe they could have bagged Barry.
I don't know. I'm pretty... We're talking about this. I don't want to give him not the credit of, like, not artsy enough because the you know, right now we have Paul Giamatti doing presses being like, I'd love to do a horror movie. I love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He's talking about like Barbarian and shit and every, you know, just collective people going, oh, we would have cared if we knew Paul. Yeah. So let's see. Barry Keoghan, no, he's full blown. No, you're right. He's too classy. I mean, we're going from this movie,
he's in the Green. I mean, he's in the Green Knight.
The Green Knight, he was super weird in because it was like out of nowhere weird too. I mean, Dunkirk, he gets a role in. He was in the TV miniseries Chernobyl. I'm just reading his IMDb. Green Knight.
Actually, he's in a great movie that I always recommend to people called American Animals. That's a true story about these kids who like stole these books of these famous books of paintings.
That's with
Evan Peters.
I remember when it was out, you were talking about, you know, he was the famous MC.
One of my favorite heist movies of the last like 10 years, probably.
He was the famous Droog.
That's right. He was Droog. Droog.
And Banshees in Sharonan with Colin Farrell.
I was just talking about, I need to watch again. That was so good.
That was so good.
Great. That actually brings movies last year that I was like, that deserves all the praise it's getting.
And Colin Farrell won Best Supporting Actor, right?
Did he win last year? I don't remember. Like I said, I barely pay attention.
Yeah, but. Sorry, I'm off track here, and actually this is what we're talking about. So the cast, though, is Colin Farrell, Nicole Kidman, your two leads, and it, like, wonderfully cast. I think Colin Farrell, to me, he's not quite like Nicole Kidman.
He's in The Lobster, so I think Yorgos Lanthimos must like working with
him. Yeah, I was meaning the, talked last about Nicole Kidman, and I was like, I'm always not surprised she's a great actress, but I'm always a little like, oh yeah, shit. No, you do real movies and are good, and not in these like gimmicky things that you could perceive of. Colin Farrell had that lane, and then just kind of like went away and came back and was like, "Nah, I'm just doing art house movies."
Yeah,
and like, and if I'm gonna do the Batman, you're gonna put me in some prosthetics. You're gonna put me in
so much makeup that you can't tell that I'm Colin Farrell.
Yeah, because like to me, like Colin Farrell is like. Oh yeah, that's Bullseye from Daredevil still, or like
phone the powerful. Booth.
I was just gonna say the powerful performance in Phone Booth, or like Alexander, or like trying too hard in Alexander the Great. Like that's where my brain will go to him, and then going like, no, you've actually had like interest, even like something like Horrible Bosses, like an interesting small role where you're just like, I'm here to steal a scene for a laugh because I know I'm Colin Farrell, and you'll find this funny.
Yep,
it's like a cokehead.
He's definitely someone who's grown on me too, and like he did like those Martin McDonagh movies and stuff. He's in Broom.
That's stuff. Yeah. So he's a good actor. It's a hot take, I know, but anyway. So we start the movie, and we find out he's a surgeon, and it's a little like this movie's really interesting because I don't know. Do you think it wants to present itself at some points as being like more of a black comedy in certain ways? Because
definitely in some moments, for sure.
The dialogue, especially
the awkwardness of the dialogue of a lot of times, especially with some of the things Martin says and the way he says them are very funny.
It's written like it's not even written. It's delivered and written as if read the lines of the script, but don't act.
Yeah.
Like everyone's just like the big one, not the big one, but the biggest, like the first tell is like, oh, my daughter, she's menstruating. And it's, you know, it's like, huh?
They're like at a dinner party. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, huh?
My daughter started menstruating this week.
And I think there were some important parts in this movie too, where I like kind of laughed when I wasn't supposed to.
Well, sure. Like I said, there's uncomfortable laughter in this movie. There's times that you laugh out of discomfort.
But we start the movie off.
We start the movie off with some like interactions with Martin. No, doctor. And what is Colin Farrell's name? Do you remember?
It is
Hank,
Steven.
Harry? Steven? Okay.
Steven. Steven and Martin.
Anyway, we get to see some of their interactions, but we don't ever. Like they take their time in revealing what their actual connection is or how they know each other or what their
seems.
But we also do know that he's kind of lying to people about how he knows Martin for some reason.
That's why it seems insidious. Like
in right, the sense it made of, me think he was a male prostitute.
I thought they were maybe having that he was molested. Essentially right. Molested.
And I think you're meant to kind of, he's buying him expensive gifts. He's lying about how he knows him. That's all stuff that's supposed to guide you down that path.
Oh, this is one of my daughter's students or my daughter's classmates who's really interested in surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's absolutely, and they build to that. And one thing this movie does is like all movies, the music, the score really tees it up for you when it's like, this is supposed to be like dun dun dun.
Oh yeah, well the music does a lot of the work because there are scenes where
they're not acting. No very, one's doing like, delivery.
Right there's like it's like a very flat shot and nobody's really reacting or emoting. But the music is like horror movie music. You know they're like
yes. So this is definitely one where for our show of what we covered, you know I'm not putting it in the horror category or. You know, it's kind of...
I'd probably call it more of a psychological thriller.
It's kind of... I was going to say, it's kind of a thriller.
It's got a supernatural edge to it, in a way.
You're right. That's the weird... There's no answers. They say everything right. That's on their mind, but there's no answers to any of our questions.
Yeah, everything's open-ended enough to leave it in kind of a supernatural space.
Yeah, so... having said that, though, Colin Farrell's name is Steve, and Barry Keoghan's is Martin, and yeah, there's been slowly meeting, and he's like, well, you should meet my family, come on by, and Steven eventually does bring him by his family, Nicole Kidman, and everyone's very, like, uptight and proper, and his daughter is, like, this is supposed to be, like, the singer. That's another comedy beat too.
The singing is quite bad.
A little bit first note. The movie's telling her she's supposed to be a singer. I think this is on purpose because she does a pop song. She sings Ellie Goulding.
Yeah.
A pop song, like a pop singer's popular song, for like 2.5 minutes.
There's a couple things I noted about. That I wanted to talk about with the family dynamic that was going on, like before he brings Martin in, that kind of struck me. First of all, we should talk about General Anesthetic, which is like a sex game that him and Nicole Kidman play.
So I want
to. He's like she like pretends to be a dead body.
That's
kind
what
of.
That is. Okay, I was think wondering so.
Or
the way she.
General Anesthetic. At least she pretends to be like passed out and incapacitated, and then like he takes advantage.
That's what that was. Okay, because literally, yeah. I was like, "Ooh, okay." Nicole Kidman, all right. And then she just lays there. And it's very uncomfortable. And I was like, this has to be my note. Maybe I sound
Well, he like drags her onto the bed, and they kind of like she like flops down, and then he like drags her onto the bed, and then later it's used.
When Must be some sort of fetish thing,
right? It's like a sex thing between them. And then I was also like, there's obviously a tighter connection between Bob, who's the son, and Nicole Kidman. And I was wondering if Barry was like, before we find out what's going on, I had in my mind, was Barry like a son replacement for him, where he like is not having a good relationship with his son, and he's like searching for something there. Which didn't end up really being the case, but
no, I wouldn't say that. He's just a bad dad.
Yeah, he's not a great dad. No.
Well, they're all just so clinical. Everyone's just so clinical. But all, my wondering, this is huge thematics. I mean, almost immediately in the dialogue and stuff about, you know, the human body and things of puberty and like maturation and everything. Like, it's all like,
yeah, it's like they're talking about girls' menstruation. They're talking about Bob's hair growing, you know,
kids. Like, there's like these kids are very aware and this, and they're almost at points like, they're almost at points talking the art house version of like an Aaron Sorkin character.
Yeah, I can see that.
Especially when we get close to the end with the daughter Kim.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, no, Brian, that's a good point though of the relationships we see at first and what we're meant to believe. Well, then actually before we also meet, he brings Barry too. We also find out through a work party, they go to a big work party and they meet everyone, you know, we meet, he's close with the coworkers. This is clear their life, the doctoring and all that shit.
He's recovered. Yeah, he's like best friend appears to be like an anesthesiologist that works with him. They're like,
yeah,
is like his buddy.
Yeah. And you find out he's a recovering alcoholic. It's been about 3 years. And that has some play later on. But you know, the then right after that, we do get the, actually, no, I'm sorry. I want to say this before we get to there, cause there's a line and it falls through to the end, and actually like the payoff in it is, he talks, we're with one of the conversations of Barry and Martin, and he mentions the line of, you know, having good friends is better than having a lot of friends. I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
There's this conversation they have, and that actually comes up later, and where, because Colin Farrell is always essentially saying the opposite. He's saying whatever he needs to say to whoever he needs to say it. Because he says that to Barry, and then later on in the movie with his son, he says the reverse of it. He
goes, oh, yeah, having a lot of friends.
He's like, yeah, it's really good to have a lot of friends. And he was thrown off of that. But Barry, I'm sorry. But anyway, he brings Barry home. Barry also, I won't give the actor's ages because the actor and Barry Keoghan and the daughter are like 15, 14 years apart. There's a big age gap between those two actors.
Yeah, Barry Keoghan's playing a lot younger than he actually is.
Yeah, he's supposed to be playing 16, and he's the daughter is
16, and the girl actually is like 15 14. Or 16.
She's yeah. 14.
Oh, she's 14?
Yeah. So, but she goes there, they go there, he's there. He's like, oh, come over, you know, for dinner or whatnot, and they hang out. There's just a lot, so much
awkwardness.
He brings gifts.
He brings them little trinkets, little knickknacks, which I think might come into play later.
I mean, are they the signifier of what happens?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is that are they a talisman? Are they? We don't know. We haven't got into the mechanics of what's going on yet. So
we never will.
We'll circle back. He meets Barry. Kim is obviously very already like just very taken by Martin. She like is obviously interested in him and thinks he's very cool and interesting, even in this first interaction. Like Bob is a little more wary of Martin.
Bob just reminds me of a kid. He's like, you got hair? My dad has hair.
Yeah. You don't even got that much hair compared to my dad.
Martin though, with the insane move, and another funny ass line too of Could I smoke in here?
Yeah.
And he, you know, she's like, okay, by the window, because she wants to be cool.
Right.
And he starts smoking. When did you start smoking? About 8 months ago. I'm addicted now.
Oh, man, he's so emo in that moment. I love it. He's like, don't ever start. I wish I hadn't, but now I'm addicted. It's terrible. So funny. It's so good. So then after this whole thing, then Martin invites Colin Farrell to his house, which also Martin was running down. It's not very nice, but I thought his house was pretty nice.
It was nice. It was fine.
Yeah.
And we get a nice jump scare of Alicia Silverstone. They take her out of her cryo gem.
It's a cameo. I thought she was going to be more of a character, but it's kind of like a full
character. So apparently, I mean, one is a full character. One is like her and Nicole Kidman both reached out and were like, we want to be in we want to be in your movie, whatever it is.
And he took the one who's the biggest actress on the planet and not the one who hasn't worked in 20 years?
Yeah.
Ah, that's what. Yeah, makes sense. That makes sense.
So, but, like, basically, at least from the IMDb trivia, Alicia Silverstone, like, was like, and she quoted that, if I don't get it, like, I just want to be in one of your movies or else I'd kill myself. Like, I'm sure it was, like, jokingly dramatic said in a...
She's like, I swear I'll baby bird some food into my kid's mouth again. Mm-hmm.
Because I think I looked at her IMDb just to, like, during this watch, just to, like, be like, what have you been up to?
She's got a horror movie out, like a pretty recent one.
She is... Yeah,
because she's in the worst movie I saw last year.
Every time I see her, she's in, like... She's just in, like, a random-ass fucking thing.
Yeah.
Like, she was...
She's still working a little bit.
Yeah, she works. She looks like she's working.
And she's pretty good in this. Like in her one scene, she's pretty good.
Yeah, I think she's really good. I think she's really good in this. So that scene. So he comes over to the house. He says, they're gonna have meatloaf. It's fucking. I don't like meatloaf. I have a thing with meatloaf. Gross. It looks gross too.
Yeah.
And like, he's like, oh, do you want to, Colin or Steven, do you want to stay and watch a movie? My God, what movie is it going to be? And also, what does it mean? It was Groundhog's Day, and the scene of Groundhog's Day talking about, I don't know, I'm a god. Like, that's on purpose. It's an on-purpose moment. What does it mean? But anyway, a little bit back and forth. He's like, I can't. He's like, I can't really stay. I got to go with my wife. And rightly so, Alicia Silverstone goes, well, call your wife. It's fine.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah. And he stays for half the movie. Fucking Martin, though, halfway through, he's like, I'm tired. I'm going to bed. And immediately, Stone's like, you got great hands. You have really great hands. And then she just deep throats his hands.
Yeah, she's just, like, immediately trying to put him down her gullet.
Yeah.
Like, get those Colin Farrell hands in your mouth.
And he's like, honestly, doesn't pull away as immediately as you should.
Yeah. It's an awkward situation, though. You know what I mean? Like, there's an element of, like, what is happening? What is going on here? You know? Women talk about it when you're assaulted, how you freeze up. I could see it just being like, I'm so freaked out right now, and like this is such a weird situation. I legitimately don't know how to react. But he does, you know, the right thing. It's weird that, like, I don't know, Martin has this weird thing about, like, and that's again, like, the movie still hasn't really given you everything about what's going on with this relationship. So now you're like, okay, so Martin wants him to be his dad and he wants him to like replace his dad and be with his mom.
Because it seems
like. And I also thought, do you think had that happened, had that played out and he'd have like in Martin's mind, whatever Martin's fantasy, he leaves Nicole Kidman and gets with his mom. Then do you think Martin doesn't do the stuff he does?
Well, can I say, I think I have to talk about this with just a spoiler at this point. Like,
no, that's fine. We can get into it.
I think in Martin's head, was going to kill his wife. Like, because remember, it was like, you got to kill one member of your family.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Martin's mind, the perfect scenario is you kill your wife.
And then my mom
takes care of the spot. His spot. Yeah. You're my father in the two things because his mother also because we don't see any more scenes of her, but it almost feels like she was somewhat in on this plan or into it, especially. I mean, how,
I would say definitely at least the part where
at least we hooking get them
this
up.
Guy over the house, and then I fuck off. You know, Martin fucks off so that I can try to deep throw some thingies. You know.
Yeah, that's what it seems.
At least she was at least in on that much.
She's
of it.
In on that. Also,
we should just go ahead and lay it out. So what starts happening, and yeah, it starts with Bob. Is he's like, he gets paralysis in his legs. He can't feel his legs. He can't walk. And they're running all sorts of tests on him. They can't figure, you got that real Exorcist kind of feeling of like the terror of a sick child where you don't know what's going on with him and the doctors can't tell you anything.
Yeah. But is it weird that I never felt like a sense of dread for these kids?
Well, we can talk about that. Yeah. I mean,
anyway, go on with the
yeah, let me get through some of this first. At the same time, you know, as obviously all this is happening, because of what happened with the mom and everything, Colin Farrell's trying to pull away a little bit more from Martin, and Martin's still in the orbit, though. We know that he's, like, seeing Kim more than the parent, you know, more than anybody knows. He's definitely, like, getting in Kim's head. And he's clearly trying to get a hold of Colin Farrell, and he finally tracks him down, and that's when he lays out the whole plan, and he basically tells him that you're both your kids and your wife, you know, it starts as three stages. It starts with paralysis, and then they'll stop eating, and then eventually bleeding from the eyes.
And then they'll die in a couple hours.
You get to bleeding from the eyes, then you're like down to your last couple days. It's mm-hmm. it's coming. Death is imminent.
Yeah.
And like we've talked about too, there's no indication of how he does this or what it is. It's just an inevitable thing that he knows is going to happen. We don't know if it's like he's a witch who cast a spell. Like I said, they gives him those keychains or those little talismans or the little gifts he gives. Is that some kind of like voodoo where they don't even
what makes this so different. Except for those trinkets, they don't even portray him of having any, you know. Let's compare it to Hereditary, another A24. Like, it's not like a Hereditary, right? Where, like, there's things in there, like, oh, there's a there's symbolism, there's this, they're being traditionally witchy or. You know, yeah,
the
mystical.
She goes and has the tea at her house.
Yeah,
and,
there's mythical. There's none of this. It's literally just happening. And
right. Well, and he just states it as fact. He's like, this is just a thing that's happening to you. Yeah, it can't be changed. It's a price you have to pay. Because what we find out is that Martin blames Colin Farrell for his dad dying. His dad died during heart surgery. And, you know, Martin blames.
And that's another thing that is. So he blames him for his, we find out that's how they know each other's father died on his table, blames him, and that's when Nicole came in, is like, oh, like every time she's like, oh, did you drink before that, knowing like you clearly drank on and gotten in trouble during surgery and it's been a problem.
Well, and like now, obviously, you know, our mind as the audience is going to, oh, this is the incident that probably made him stop drinking. Like, Martin's dad's death is probably the thing that. Flipped the switch.
Never an answer about it, though.
No, they never tell us that. That's what you're. But you're definitely, I would say, right down that path.
But yeah, he goes. Yeah, and then they just kind of go like the kids. Bob is paralyzed, and we deal with his paralysis for a lot longer, I think, and the testing and everything. And I was going to ask you, in your professional opinion, how were the scans depicted?
I don't know. It seems like they did as many as they could. They tried. I do feel like once Colin Farrell kind of knew what was going on, he should have. He still doesn't immediately come clean. I'd have been like, I need toxicology. I need blood work. Something is like, there's an outside force acting on this kid and I want to find, we need to find out what it is. Like something is, he was fed something. He was given something. Although another place my mind went is Martin some kind of mentalist? Is he some kind of like the power of suggestion?
Well,
the weird way he talks and stuff. Is he subtly like, controlling them. Because we do see after Kim gets sick and her and Bob are both in the hospital, that she can get, like, when she's on the phone with Martin, he talks her into getting up out of the bed and walking to the window. And it's like the only time we see her walk ever.
Well, it's literally like, you're right, like, holy shit, she can walk.
Yeah.
Because she's one we don't, and it's a good filmmaking move of this. We don't see her trials and tribulations. We saw it all. We know what's happening. Beds next to each other.
Well, we just know that she's having the same experience.
Right, that's what I mean.
It's like don't. We saw what was going on with Bob, and now they've same things going on with her, same symptoms. So, they probably run the same tests. So we
it's good filmmaking.
Now they're both sick, and we're on the, you know.
Yeah, she gets up, talks to us. That's a good point. Maybe it is that because.
Right, is it some kind of something about the way he, like, he talks to them or controls them mentally, like
an immediate
some kind of cult leader or something, you know?
And immediately Nicole Kidman is sitting in there and she's like, huh? No, you're not allowed to talk to that guy. Stop it. And then they never walk again.
Well, we think that, but also like, there's more indications later that her and Martin, that she might even be kind of, before she gets sick, she indicates that she knows that he's upset, that he's causing this. She's like, mad at me because of my dad?
Yeah.
You know, and like.
So she in a trance?
And she kind of like offers herself to Martin. She does. He's kind of not into that. Like, he doesn't like kind of take advantage of that.
She puts a full come on him, like strips down, and is just like
so much creepier when you use actual 14-year-olds.
That's why it's such a.
It adds to the realism, but it also makes it worse. That's why it's worse. Like
it's one of those things like, oh, we could at least like maybe shoot it a different way, so it's not just like here's this 14-year-old in her underwear. Yeah, a little before that, though, but you're like, that's when she's the one who seems truly like, let's use possessed. She seems possessed.
Well, like you said, it gave me those Halloween Ends vibes where it's like they're kind of like vibing and they're kind of both, you know, whether she's getting manipulated or not, you know.
But a little after that, a little before that, there was a few things that were really upsetting. There's a couple moments in this movie that are really like upsetting.
We're about to talk about Dad's story, aren't we?
I was going to say, this is before. This is actually, I'm jumping backwards a little bit because I'm just remembering some stuff. Is when we get to the first stage of not eating and Colin Farrell was trying to shove the donuts in the little boy's mouth. That was very upsetting to me.
Trying to force feed him. Well, there's that like frustration where he kind of like thinks he's faking it, or he's like, snap out of it. It's just,
he starts dropping them and he's like, I'll make you eat your hair.
When he's trying to walk him down the hall and he just like flops him on the floor a couple times. It's so funny. Fucked up.
No, you know what's the funniest? I let out like a, huh, chuckle. I think it's the scene, like right before the phone thing and like with the phone call outside and she gets up and the boy's like, I'll get up too. And he just rolls off the bed.
Flops out of the bed. I don't know. I laugh too. Because he's just kind of in the foreground. He just kind of plunks out.
That's a thing about this filmmaking style. And the poor things is kind of like that too, is everything such a wide shot and from the foreground, like things look so big around these characters, it seems to go.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't want to jump ahead, but there's a
trumpet.
I wrote down a thing about horrific absurdity that I think we're going to get into as we get into the end of the movie.
Yeah. There's
talk about when he finds out that Martin's involved with these ailments, he tries to talk to Bob about, he tries to get Bob to like, tell him what he thinks that Martin did something to Bob, and Bob's afraid to admit it. Mm-hmm. So he's like trying to coax a story out of Bob by admitting a secret of his own. But he tells Bob a story that would scar me for the end to the rest of my days. If my dad said this to me, I would never be able to look at my dad the same way again.
What is that story, Brian?
No, I think we should save it and let people at home just enjoy it, because it's not really pertinent to anything else.
No, you're right.
Just drops it, and Bob is just kind of like, "No, I don't have a secret." And he's like, "I'll tell you a secret. We'll play a game. I'll tell you a crazy secret. You tell me a crazy secret. We'll see what happens." And he's trying to like, and Bob's just like, and Bob just like stonewalls him, which Bob's a king. I love fucking the little actor who plays Bob rips. He's so good.
I also just like how the kid's like, "Yeah, no, I'm good. I have no secrets. I'm good." And
that's I'm not a weird freak like you.
That's
Dad.
Like he's like that's impossible. And he's like, "No, I'm six."
Yeah, exactly. Or yeah, whatever. I'm like, "No, no, I'm not all fucked up like you."
But a little bit after that,
that's way worse than having to hear my dad tell that story is way worse than the illness.
Oh, it's so bad. A little bit after that, though, he fully confesses and tells everything to Nicole Kidman.
And this is where she starts investigating to try to find out if he's drunk or not.
Well, he also says another thing, like this big part of Steven's personality and everything is he's always the smartest guy in the room. He's always changing his stories or things by a little bit. And one of the things he says is, she's like, "Well, did he die on your table?" He goes, "Well, no, a surgeon can't kill anyone. That's the anesthesiologist.
Yeah.
Which is a little wild thing.
Says the same thing later.
Yeah, which is a wild thing. So she starts doing a little investigation. She's like, "All right, well, I'm going to go to the anesthesiologist, who's your best friend." And he's immediately like, "Oh, yeah, I remember that. Remember when I hit on you at a party? Remember when I wanted you to do something for me at a party?
Did we see that? I don't remember seeing that." We didn't see that. She talks about it, and, like, they reference it, but I don't know if we ever we didn't see it, okay. Basically, she makes reference to that, like, he's hit on her previously, and she'll, like, if he wants the information, you know.
Yeah.
And then cut to information handoff.
Literally just jerks him off, and the stupidest thing of it, in the sense of the information, stupid for the character, that dumb. He's like, "Nah, anesthesiologist can't kill anyone. It was the surgeon."
Yeah, he says the same. Yeah, he just says the opposite to her. But he does tell her that, like, he had had a couple drinks, like, earlier.
Yeah, he tells her the drink
before,
part.
Like, yeah. He does remember that and stuff.
But it's still another thing in this movie resolves nothing. I mean, she comes... Like, this couple never fights.
It leads her to realize that she, like, that's finding out that he was probably drunk and that's probably what happened, basically leads it to be like, okay, it's his fault, which sends her to Martin to be like, why should me and my kids pay for this? She's basically saying, kill him. He did it. Kill his ass. And again, Martin is like, it doesn't matter. Like, I can't.
It's not how
it is what it is. What's happening is happening. There's no amount of changing it. There's nothing I can do. It's something he has to do. Like,
yeah, they have that encounter. That really doesn't go much because they kidnap him.
Well, yeah. Well, then again, it's like she tries that, and then the next she comes home and is basically like, nobody dresses down somebody like Nicole Kidman. Like, nobody intimidates. No one will cut you down. Anyone who saw The Northman, which was one of my favorite movies of last year, she's incredible in it. She's so good at, like, making you feel about this tall.
Just small.
And then she does that to Colin Farrell, which leads to probably my favorite scene, and a scene that definitely cements this as a comedy in my mind, which is where he's running around the kitchen screaming, looking for teeth or pubes. Teeth? He's like, teeth? Pubes? He's like opening drawers and looking for
find some little talisman. We have ears in the cabinet.
Yeah, he's talking about it being voodoo or whatever, and that leads him to just like ranting about teeth and pubes, which I thought was so fucking funny.
But she also does the same thing of sucking his hands a little later.
Well,
and
yeah,
oh, that's a long. You know what? I jumped way too far.
Right, you're jumping ahead because let's get into the kidnapping part because I wrote down that he should have watched Prisoners because he would have learned two things from prisoners, and that's that you can't torture crazy, and you can't kidnap your problems away.
But he does. He kidnaps him, and like Martin's almost enjoying it more than not. He's like,
I feel like he gives Martin more power by putting him in down there. He like martyrs Martin.
Well, there's this scene. There's that during the main torture scene, right? He's punching him and eventually shoots him in the leg. And fucking he goes, it's a metaphor, and bites himself in the forearm. But that cuts to the hospital and the daughter going, no, he didn't kill him. Like, she telepathy knew when he was getting tortured that, no, dad didn't kill him.
Yeah, they're back at the house. They'd moved the kids back to the house at that point.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting the room book confused.
Well, because with Martin in the house, it seems like I said, it seems like at that point, everybody kind of knows the score. It's like the kids also seem to know what's going on as far as one of them has to die. And the kids begin like kind of taunting each other in a way of like, she's all like, when you die, can I have your iPod and stuff? And he's like talking about, you know, they're talking about how, you know, they bought me a piano. They just didn't want to tell you, but it's coming in a month. I'm still, you know, kind of like, I'm still going to be
So but
they're like doing a little back and forth.
They're acting possessed. They're acting more possessed, not caring. Because
and that leads into what you were talking about. Well, like Nicole Kidman, kind of offering herself up more to him. Basically, everybody starts sucking up to Colin Farrell because you know they know that the only thing that's going to end this is somebody getting killed. So like, Bob is cutting his hair and trying to like do the chores, even though. And this is why I talked about comedy earlier. Watching the kids drag themselves across the floor all the time and try to do things, and like, it's so funny and weird. They just look like weird. Dead little legs dragging behind them.
It's visually weird.
Bob cutting his own hair and then being like, oh, okay, I'm going to water the plants now, and then like army crawling across the floor. So
they're all literally sucking up to him, and that's...
Yeah. And to the point where Nicole Kidman is even proposing a plan of like, we should kill one of the kids.
Well, Brian, that's where I wanted to go with is I literally I don't have many notes for the later end of the movie because I'm just kind of watching
because
I was like, oh, a naked Nicole Kidman's like, we should kill our kids. Yeah, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, okay, movie. Naked Nicole Kidman, tell me what to do.
Oh, okay, but no, she does. Does that. The one thing a little before that, though, that's also batshit crazy, is he asks the teachers which one's the best kid.
I love that. I have getting kids stats from the school. He's like,
crazy.
He's like finding out like who's doing better in classes and extracurriculars. They like flat out is just like, which of my kids is better?
Crazy. But then they hang around. I mean, it has to be the daughter, right?
Well, this is like Kim finally breaks, right?
She runs. She does her best job to like.
She comes down to. I think finally the delusion with Martin is finally broken at that point, where she goes down and she's like, "Okay, I'm ready. I'll get you out of here. Let's run away together. You just have to heal me." And she realizes he either can or won't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then that's where she turns and then. Her guilt of having been like kind of like
then she goes to her dad
Martin, makes her run away and they find her dragging herself down the road and she's basically trying to give herself up as penance. She's like,
yeah, she has that,
I will kill me, I deserve it.
She's a little speech for her dad, and that's where it's like she's talking like people don't, which again is the point of the movie and the aesthetic of it, but like she's like, I deserve to go, I had the life, he gives him. But they also like hang in that bit of scene that we still have Martin around because Martin goes away at a certain
eventually,
point.
Eventually, yeah, Nicole Kidman lets. She tries everything.
They hang around him Martin's like
feet. Eventually, she lets him go.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Like the kissing feet. Like they hang around him like he's a deity.
Yeah. Well, exactly, because like I said, there's the point where it's basically like the bargaining stage, right? They're trying everything. They're like maybe. Kissing Martin's feet, maybe treating Martin like a god will get it. No, maybe kissing Dad's ass, maybe he'll pick me. You know, I mean, they're all desperate to find the solution, even if the solution is just for them, a selfish one. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, Kitty, but anyway, but yeah, after that, after the runaway, Nicole Kidman lets him go. And this is actually the point where Stephen Colin Farrell has like the like more acting in it, where he's like legit like smacking her. He's like, "What would you do that? What would you do that? Bam!" And she's like, "Cause it doesn't matter."
Yeah.
And then
we skipped over a great scene where like when they have Martin captured and like basically. The whole thing where they're torturing him, they're threatening him, and he's like, he basically tells him, like, "You can kill me, you dig my grave, you better dig three more." Like, that's a really good scene where he's like, "Killing me won't fix this." So, like, it's just an inevitability. And that's what she also learns. And she learns that no amount of begging and no amount of bargaining is going to do it either. So she lets him go.
But they all come to it at a certain point. I mean, really, except for Bob, and then we have Bob is bleeding right out the eyes, and
right, we're at the tipping point now. There's no more. Colin Farrell has to make a choice, or
he's cleaning. You know, he's cleaning his eyes. Because you get
the impression that if Bob dies of this, that's not like the same as killing. It wouldn't count. It would still keep going. The point is, Colin Farrell has to actively kill someone.
Yeah, he can't let his kid die.
He can't just let him die of the illness. That won't work.
So he decides, you know, I'm gonna do this in the craziest way possible.
Now, when I talked about horrific absurdity earlier, this is the scene that really came to my mind.
He sits around. Thank you for waiting on that, then. He gags and balances two children. And he just tells his wife, we're going to meet in the circle downstairs.
And she's down.
Like, I'm going to wear my black dress. Okay. Also,
a last ditch effort to be like, remember me, don't look at how hot I am.
And
also, like, maybe just something nice to die in, you know.
Yeah, I took that more as a, this is how you want to do it, sure, I'm gonna look nice or whatever. And
I also like the reveal that she was also tied up. It's like he asked her down politely, but he still tied her up when he got
there. Yeah, he tied her up too. He tied everyone up because he's shooting a gun at her. He's spinning around in a circle with a rifle, blindfolded.
He's doing like what I would consider like a birthday party game, like the one where you spin around with your head on the bat and then you try to like pin
a dizzy bat.
Yeah, dizzy bat. He's doing that, but like with a gun.
Yeah, and I think we're at like the fifth. I think it takes about five shots. I tried counting.
Yeah, he definitely misses at least two or three times.
He skims Kim's head, his wife's head. He basically skims everyone really close eventually. His daughter, his wife.
He's coming close, but he's not quite hitting.
And then he hits Bob. Poor Bob.
Hits Bob.
Poor Bob. And then the movie really just... It does end, but we get an after shot of that. We get a Sopranos diner shot.
Well, yeah, they're at the same diner where Martin used to meet with Colin Farrell, and they're having a meal, and Martin walks in, and he sits at the counter, and you get a pretty meaningful look between him and Kim, which makes me think that she is not out from his thrall at this point.
They quip some long glance. I don't know if you would say Alfred's thrall. It's hard to tell, right?
Like I said, the impression I got, here's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of meaningful looks between them, and then you see they show Nicole Kidman, Colin Farrell, like seeing, like kind of taking all that in and acknowledging it. And then the look I think they get is wrong kid died.
Oh.
I think they look at this and they're like, oh, our problems aren't over. Kim is still like locked in on Martin. And now we killed Bob for nothing. I don't know. Like I said, she's
walking. Like everyone's
looking back at him. She's like locked in on him. I just don't feel like that's over. I don't feel like Kim and Martin is over.
I feel like that's just how, I don't know, because they had that look at each other from moment one.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think he always had power over. I think he almost immediately, she was attracted to him in a normal teen way, but I think he also used that, you know, he's obviously got some manipulative tendencies.
Sure.
Because Colin Farrell makes a quick mention. You don't really, they never, like most things in this movie, they're kind of said in passing. They're kind of not dwelled on.
Yeah,
he mentions that Martin had problems like before his dad ever died. He's always had issues, you know. So like, Martin wasn't a normal kid to begin with.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like I said, I think the movie's it's one of those movies that's purposely left open for you to interpret. But the vibe I got was one of regret that they were like.
I like the play that
They're like, we went the coward's route and did a random, and what we should have done is the right thing, which is what she told them to do, which was let her be the sacrifice, let her martyr herself, you know?
Yeah, that might have been the way.
She's poisoned. She can't. She's too far. She's too far gone. She can't come back.
Maybe she could.
We don't know, though. Yorgos. We'll never... Make the killing of a sacred deer too.
More the deers. Killingest. killing season.
Killing season, damn right.
I don't know. What did you? I did like it a lot. I liked getting my I think at the end of it and talking to you and everything, I did like getting my, like, there's certain things where I'm like, oh, I liked getting my art house on with this one. I liked the vaguity of the storytelling and everything.
Like the way it took its time revealing.
Yeah, not everything.
Revealing things about, like, you know, no dumb exposition up front. They let the movie kind of breathe, and they let everything kind of come at you a little more naturally.
Yeah, not everything worked for me in the sense is I do wish some of the stuff was just more of, like I could have used a little more creep factor. I know that's not like the point of it all.
It's more, there's a lot of like kind of. Like like open spaces and just kind of like quiet and kind of antiseptic feeling. It feels very kind of like alien and kind of like
alien. That's a good word. He feels like,
yeah,
almost every character that speaks feels like they're coming from a different planet, but it's on purpose.
One thing I didn't talk about that I wrote down was why did he hire everybody in this movie is British or Australian or Irish, and they all are doing half-assed American accents? Either just let them talk like they talk.
Yeah.
Like, fucking Barry Keoghan and Colin Farrell basically have the same accent. Like, just let them have an accent.
Because Colin Farrell is clearly playing his native tongue just more like, dumbed down
a little bit. It's like
but Barry Keoghan's supposed to be English. I mean, American,
yeah.
And there's a few times I had headphones on watching it too where I was like, oh, you just couldn't say that word.
Yeah. Well, and Nicole Kidman too. I mean, they've obviously, Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell have been doing American accents for years and years, and they're very good, but like, it's noticeable to me that like, there's not really a single American actor at all. They're all like,
it was filmed in.
If you're going to have everybody, if you're just going to have all actors, just let them have accents. I don't care. Fucking Napoleon didn't have a single person speaking French in it. It literally doesn't matter.
Still wild. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good observation.
I get it. You just pick the best actors and all, but like, just let them.
Yeah, I think.
Why force them to even do an accent? Just don't bother.
I think, I don't know if that's a Yorga, that might be a Yorga style thing, because Poor Things is kind of like that, where like I have no idea what a good English accent is or not. I just want to be, but like Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, like a lot of people are, you know, doing that aren't of a native tongue doing it when they don't need to be, because it's a fantasy movie, even though they're saying we're in England, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. This is definitely, I think, a unique, unique. I don't want to say possession movie because it's not, but like, unique curse film. Like, it's a unique telling of
how to say a
curse movie, and maybe that's why Groundhog's Day was the movie that was picked to show that, because Groundhog's Day, at the end of the day, is a cursed a movie, is a cursed film.
Yeah, and Bill Murray has to find a way to break the curse, just like Colin Farrell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's why Bill Murray shoots a kid in Groundhog Day.
He absolutely does.
That's how that movie ends. If you haven't seen it,
and maybe that's all that was. Maybe that's why, and that's really.
I'll tell you what. Just a tangent, because I love Groundhog Day. There's some very dark theories about what Bill Murray may or may not have tried in all those different instances, and killing a kid is not out of the realm of possibility. You know what I mean? He probably did a lot of stuff.
He did a lot of things just to try. Maybe this will get me out of it. There's a certain point, even if you do it and then you're in jail the rest of the days, it's still probably better than...
Let's put it this way. There's at least... He may not have actively killed a kid, but I guarantee there's at least one or two times that he let that kid fall out of the tree and didn't catch him. And I was like, yeah.
Is this the day? Yeah. It happens every day. Yeah. No, dude. Yeah, so that, to me, that's... I feel like we covered a good length of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is when you're talking about movies like this that are kind of left open ended. It's hard, you know. I always leave feeling like a dumb guy because
sounded like a really smart guy today.
Well, I just feel like it's one of those things like you can only take away from it, you know, what you can. And I'm sure there's other interpretations and different, but
these are movies too that really benefit. Like we do a right, we're not a review show. We just talk.
Yeah,
and have a conversation about movies, and I think having only a one watch of a movie like this, as me and you did only one watch, is a little more difficult than seeing it a few times than having conversation about it, in the sense of you see different things, and I could recollect back on, I remember my first watch to that third, like when we talked Infinity Pool, right? Like that was the third time seeing that movie and seeing so many different levels to that movie. This movie, I'm sure, is the same exact way.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Like you watch it the next time and it's probably like, oh yeah, did you notice that, you know, they never, I'm just making something up, they never address each other in the first person, you know.
Yeah, there'll be some kind of thing that, yeah, exactly, or like some kind of looks or glance or knowing thing that like you didn't pick up on the first time, but it has more meaning because of what you know it's coming. Yeah, it's definitely a movie that could that probably is satisfying for rewatch, but it's also a thing I could see myself not going back to, because it was very good, but I don't know if it would have a strong rewatch value.
I don't think I'll ever rewatch it again, or if I do, it won't be for a long time. But I recommend it. I thought it was great. And you know, for like what it is, I think you have the new.
Oh, I mean, very creative, wonderfully acted. You know,
it's just
a good movie.
It's silly that this is movie. I can't believe this I've mentioned once this whole podcast. We're maturing, so I'll end it with this. Is, you know, this is 2017. This is when this is still like A24 getting its name. And it's just buying properties more. It's the distribution, not so much making. And they clearly were looking for, we have an aesthetic and a lane we're trying to get through at this time. And these are the type of movies we're buying. You know, these open-ended thriller, but it's kind of comedy, like everything. Yeah. And, you know, now A24 thing's a little different. In the sense, like it's they're the art house, but they're this and they're making their movies.
Yeah,
this is not quite there. They distributed it and blah blah blah. Anyway, Brian, if you have any more notes, now's your time. If not,
no, I can't think of anything else. I think we talked this one out pretty good. We did a good job.
All right, I am satisfied as well. And as always, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely.
And thanks for listening, all. You know where to find us. And stay frightful.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.